Stealth jihad, soft jihad, or what I prefer to call lawful Islamism, is the effort to promote the goals of radical Islam via lawful means.
Daniel Pipes is an academic with a message for Americans.
It won't lead to the blowing up of large cities, but it's more of a risk in the sense that it has more likelihood of achieving its goal, that is, the transformation of our countries into countries dominated by the Islamic law.
On his websites, Campus Watch and Militant Islam Monitor, he warns that Islamists are working through schools, universities and associations to turn America into an Islamic state.
Worst case scenarios, that things look like they do in the UK.
His message may not be mainstream, but Daniel Pipes does have a significant following. His websites get 400,000 hits a month. However, he's worried that Americans are failing to react to stop the US going the way of Britain.
I have to say I'm astonished by the news that comes from Britain. Polygamy is now legal in the United Kingdom. Yes, granted you have to go contract it someplace else, but you return to the United Kingdom. It is legal. That's a major development. Here is the infrastructure of an Islamic order, bit by bit. And
okay.
That is a next
but
step.
Let's stick to the US for a minute.
I'm giving you the British examples because that's my worst nightmare.
A lot of people would say, all right, we can see that there's some cultural effort being made to accommodate another culture and another religion. What is wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that in principle. I am happy to see small changes, but I will not accept large changes. I will not accept polygamy. I will fight replacing the Constitution with the Quran. I don't want that.
In this BBC programme, I'll be examining the campaigns activists like Daniel Pipes run and the impact they have. One of Mr. Pipes' biggest campaigns has been directed against New York's first Arabic language charter school. In 2007, with funding from the taxpayer, New York's Department of Education set up the school with the idea that it would be secular and open to boys and girls of all religions. But Mr. Pipes, who has himself studied Arabic, didn't like it. He wrote on his website, "Arabic language instruction is inevitably laden with pan-Arabist and Islamist baggage." His predictions alarmed a group of New Yorkers who set up a coalition they called Stop the Madrasa, conducting a blogging campaign on internet stations like Free Radio Dar al-Harb.
Your daily reminder, jihad works both ways. We are live with the most up-to-date, unvarnished analysis of Islamist aggression.
Let me introduce the fabulous Pamela Hall. Tell me and tell the audience a little bit about Stop the Madrasa.
We started with the StopTheMadrasa.org and started posting articles that were being written. Daniel Pipes was great. He opened the door to a lot of the facts.
And with Daniel Pipes on its board, Stop the Madrasa focused its campaign against the school's principal, an American of Yemeni origin called Debbie Al-Montasser.
Al-Montasser herself is against the Patriot Act, is against the war on terror, feels America is a racist country. How do you have that ideology as part of the leader of a school?
Debbie Al-Montasser is, says Daniel Pipes, one of the soft jihadists, a law-abiding Islamist, he says, working within the system to turn America into an Islamic caliphate. I asked him on what grounds he'd made that assessment.
Ms. Al-Montasser has shown by her statements that she is one of them. The things she has said about 9/11 suggest she's a lawful Islamist. So I'm confident in my assessment of her in that.
What she said about 9/11 was that she felt that the people responsible had stolen her religion. What's so bad about that?
She denied that they're Muslims. She said that the perpetrators of 9/11 were not Muslims. That's a typical statement of Islamists.
Stop the Madrasa's breakthrough in its campaign to expose Debbie Al-Montasser as a radical came when it got hold of a photo showing T-shirts emblazoned with the words Intifada NYC. A clear call, according to Stop the Madrasa, for a Palestinian-style uprising in New York City. Debbie Al-Montasser, it said, was linked to the organization that printed the T-shirts, Arab Women Active in the Arts and Media, or AWAM. Mrs. Al-Montasser sat on the board of another association that rented AWAM rooms for its summer program. A flurry of calls went out in the press for Mrs. Al-Montasser to clarify her links to the T-shirts.
I have no links other than that they were using the space.
So this link was established. It wasn't a strong link. Then people said, OK, well, do you agree with the sentiment on these T-shirts, Intifada NYC?
That question was not asked. And if it were asked, why is it being asked of me? It's being asked of me because I'm of Arab and Muslim background.
But it having come to the fore, you're a public figure. It's quite normal to be asked then, okay, well, you know, you say you're into interfaith dialogue. Do you support this Intifada NYC? Do you?
The work that I've done, quite frankly, spells out exactly, you know, that I am a person who believes in nonviolence and always looking for ways to resolve conflicts creatively and positively. Again, this question was not asked, and I don't think that I should be asked right now either, because I'm Arab and Muslim, that I'm being singled out for this kind of question.
So you refuse to answer that kind of question?
Yes, I refuse.
I just want to be clear that you feel it's unfair to be asked whether you support violence or not.
It's unfair for me to be asked. If this is something being asked of other public school principals and they're all going to respond to it, I would gladly be happy to respond to it.
The Department of Education insisted Debbie Almontassa respond. They instructed her to give an interview to the popular right-wing paper, The New York Post. The interviewer asked her to define the word intifada.
I, as an educator, responded to it by saying the word, if you look it up, within the Arabic dictionary, it comes from the root word shaking off. I then went on to explain to him that this word has evolved and developed different meanings for different people based on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict where thousands of people have died.
So you weren't asked, do you agree with the Intifada? You were asked, what is the root word and what's the meaning of this word?
That is correct. He then said to me, well, we believe that the organization is training the girls to engage in a Gaza-style uprising in New York City. And
the girls who make these T-shirts?
Yes, and the organization. And my response as an educator and as a parent and as a person with common sense, I did not believe that these girls were engaging in any kind of training that would teach them to do anything violent.
When the article came out, what did it say?
It portrayed me as defending the T-shirts and minimizing the historical context of the word intifada.
Is this the article, the headline of which was founding principle of Muslim school is revolting?
Yes.
Stop the Madrasa won a victory, of sorts. Mrs. Almontassa was asked to resign, but the school still went ahead without her. Now that it's up and running, Debbie Almontassa is in a defiant mood. She's taking the Department of Education to court over her resignation. So why, at the time, did she give in?
At that point, New Visions for Public Schools asked for my resignation. They said to me, it's either you or the school.
How did you respond?
I was absolutely shocked. All along, I had their support 150%. And, you know, based on the New York Post article, this complete shift in their thinking and support was quite devastating.
The allegations against Debbie Almontassa are despicable. And it is to create this notion that we should fear Muslims, you know, because every one of them is a potential terrorist.
So says Roly Matalon, a man who would have every reason to be concerned if indeed Debbie Almontassa was going to imbue anti-Zionist sentiment in her New York school. But Roly Matalon, a rabbi at one of New York's largest and oldest Jewish congregations, B'nai Jeshurun, has joined a coalition to support Debbie Almontassa.
Bring Debbie back! Bring Debbie back!
However, one thing was bothering me. When I interviewed Mrs. Almontassa, a woman who described herself as a media organizer, taped our interview. Afterwards, I discovered she was Mona Eldari, co-founder of the organization which printed the Intifada NYC T-shirts. So there is more of a link than Debbie Almontassa has admitted. Was Rabbi Matalon comfortable with this?
Why do we always ask people in these communities to condemn their own? These are young women who want to be in your face, right? By putting Intifada NYC, they want to generate some sort of situation of outrage. They're teenagers. Now, Debbie has nothing to do with that project. She's very tenuously connected. If she were their educator, maybe you can ask Debbie Almontassa, What are you going to do in order to work with these young women to understand how the message that is inscribed in their T-shirts might impact upon other communities in New York City or around the world? But Debbie had nothing to do with this. So to weave a whole plot in order to make the equation Debbie Almontazzo supports the Intifada, I think it's ridiculous, it's nasty.
We make use of the materials we have, secondary as they might be.
Daniel Pipes stands by the campaign against Debbie Almontazzo.
Absolutely, it's justified in the sense that here is a new turn in New York City and indeed American public education, and it should be critiqued.
They're working to silence critics of the Islamic Jihad. The failure of the Western media, including the BBC, to recognize the Jew-hating Nazi virus that pervades the Arab governments and their media is the biggest part, I think, of the problem of confronting the enemy and is itself part of the stealth jihad.
Political activist David Horowitz tells me that even though it's a leftist appeaser of radical Islam, he's sure there are plenty of nice people at the BBC, so I don't take it personally when his dog bites me.
I think it's the microphone, she doesn't like it. She actually bit me.
Oh, yeah, I was going to warn you about that.
I'm meeting him at his David Horowitz Freedom Centre in LA, from where he organises what he calls Islamofascism Awareness Weeks.
Islamofascism first identifies the religious nature of the enemy, and second, its totalitarian nature. So Islamofascism is a perfectly appropriate term, but if you interview a leftist for this program, they'll say it's an Islamophobic, prejudiced, discriminatory term. That is the voice of the aiders and abettors of the stealth jihad.
Go away.
Go away.
Footage on YouTube shows that David Horowitz is often booed when he expounds these views on American campuses. He says that's because the left cannot stand him. It's a movement he once belonged to. But while he may be heckled at universities, he is welcomed in Washington.
I'm a mainstream Republican. I know George Bush. He knows me. The book I just wrote, called Party of Defeat, How Democrats and Radicals Sabotaged the War on Terror Before and After 9/11, as a, you know, endorsement from 18 sitting congressmen, the ranking members of the intelligence, homeland security, terrorism committees. You know, I'm very well respected in the Republican Party in America, no question.
How do you get your funding for the David Horowitz Freedom Center?
I'm so glad you asked. I have 100,000 individuals who send me money.
These 100,000 individuals, among them members of government?
I don't know what you mean by that.
People in power?
Well, I don't know what you mean. I mean, I do events, and I have had at my events senators, congressmen, administration officials.
Mr. Horowitz believes that one of the reasons he's not well received at universities is because they've been purged of conservatives and taken over by left-leaning scholars. When I mention one particular scholar, Nadia Abu El Haj, a lecturer in archaeology at Barnard College, Columbia University, this is David Horowitz's response.
Nadia Abu
El Haj. Oh, this fake professor, yeah. The one who says that there were no Jews in Israel 2,000 years ago.
I don't think she says that. But...
well, whatever.
David Horowitz was not personally involved in petitioning Columbia University to deny Nadia Abu El Haj academic tenure there, but articles to that effect did appear on his website. It was actually Daniel Pipes who commissioned a review of her book about the role of archaeology in building the nation state of Israel. On the basis of this review, campaigners said that Professor Abu El Haj could not read or speak Hebrew, had never been on an archaeological dig, and that her scholarship was shoddy and slanderous. But Professor Abu El Haj's award-winning book is well respected by her academic peers, including in Israel, where it's taught at Ben Gurion University. Why then did this campaign catch on?
So we're actually in this little library in my office.
Someone on one of those blogs described you as a trophy wife dripping in,
yes,
in jewels.
Yes.
Where are the jewels? Where are the high heels?
I have no high heels.
No.
Why did this happen? It's part of a certain cultural and political moment in the U.S. Basically, in short, I am, in the eyes of people like Daniel Pipes, etc., I am a Palestinian who wrote a book about Israeli society, and that's an extraordinary violation for them. They have set up organizations and websites and campaigns that target particular scholars, all of whom are very well respected and serious scholars, accuse them of being shoddy scholars, which is their most polite accusation, being anti-Semites, being extremists, even being jihadists, as a way of delegitimizing them.
In the campaigns against you on the internet, they say you hate Israelis.
I don't hate Israelis. And there are many Israeli colleagues of mine who would dispute that point. I don't hate Israelis. I'm engaging in a critical project that thinks about the nature of the Israeli state within the context of scholarship that's thought about nationalisms and nation states and colonialism across the globe. The issue is they don't want Israel to be included in the list of states that scholars engage with critically. We do that. Israel's not alone.
Colombia ignored the petition and stuck to its strictly prescribed tenure process, which in the end saw Professor Abu El Haj granted tenure. But had the accusations of anti-Semitism hit home on a personal level?
People really fear that label. But I have to say, I feel absolutely confident that I'm not an anti-Semite, and I therefore can't take it seriously. I think it's being used as a weapon to shut people like me up, and it's not going to work.
But it is working. Other scholars campaigned against in this way have had their invitations to speak at conventions suddenly withdrawn. Some have even been sacked. A group of Middle East professors has likened a list Daniel Pipes published called Scholars Who Hate America to the blacklists of the 1950s communist hunter Senator Joseph McCarthy. It's a parallel the liberal press has also picked up. But Professor Abu El Haj believes it's only a true comparison up to a point.
To invoke McCarthyism can sound a little alarmist and hysterical, in the sense, clearly, that McCarthy was a senator whose committee destroyed the lives of thousands of people in the U.S. Now, having said that, I think as political projects, they are similar. What was the problem for McCarthy and his gang and for Pipes and their gang? The problem is, how do you deal with speech with which you disagree? You lump together what are complex and differentiated intellectual political positions, you caricature them, and then you label that caricature with the name of something that isn't a good thing in American society. So at the time it was communist or Jewish, today it's Muslim or jihadist or anti-Semite. And then you attach that label to individuals whose character and credibility you want to undermine. In that way it is parallel. And I think it's a serious threat that really needs to be responded to, including by American Jews who don't agree with it.
The song being sung at this Shabbat in Midtown Manhattan was composed by Shlomo Carlbach, New York's legendary singing rabbi. He was considered to have been the most influential writer of Jewish religious songs over the last half century. So this is just one example of the way this city has been at the center of developments in Jewish culture, religion, and politics. After all, New York has the biggest Jewish population of any city in the whole world. So there's nowhere better to ask Jewish Americans to respond to this controversy.
Thank you for traveling with New Jersey Transit, and have a safe day.
Larry Kohler Esses is editor-at-large of the highest-selling Jewish weekly publication in the country, Jewish Week.
I have written about Nadia Abu El Haj's book that I found it deeply anti-Israel, but that was, to me, a separate question from the way her critics went about attacking her. They used untruths, distortions, and just outright incorrect material. In the case of Debbie Almontasser, there were individuals who'd written about her, including Daniel Pipes, who said that she was a, quote, 9/11 denier. Now, for American Jews who read that, that's a very special way of putting things. It's appropriating the language of the Holocaust, because there's a category of people called Holocaust deniers. I found that he had written, quoting Debbie Almontasser to prove his point, that she'd written, "I don't recognize the people who committed the attacks as either Arabs or Muslims." But the part he left out was the sentence that followed. "Those people who did it have stolen my identity as an Arab and have stolen my religion." As a reporter, part of my job was to call Daniel Pipes. And I said to him, "I see you've written this column saying that she's a 9/11 denier. You say that she says that Arabs and Muslims didn't do this thing. based on the quote you gave, but probably you didn't see the whole quote. I found the whole quote. I want to read it. He said, no, I saw it. I said, oh, well, let me read it to you. And I read him the whole quote. Then there was a long silence. He says, well, she clearly means that Arabs and Muslims didn't do this. And I thought, this person knows what he's doing.
How can you dismiss Daniel Pipes and David Horowitz when there are organizations, student organizations on American campuses, which are inviting imams who preach hate speech, and there is anti-Semitism going on?
They should be exposed. They should be exposed using accurate facts. They should be exposed with everything that you can throw at them that's accurate and correct and objectively true. The worst thing you can do is throw mud at the Muslims who are not saying those things, because then you make all Muslims feel like they have no place in this country. And there's another thing that I think is very important here. In the 1950s, there was a strong consensus view against communism from the liberal left all the way to the right. But the single thing which did the most to discredit anti-communism as a cause was Joseph McCarthy. He split the anti-communist consensus by engaging in scurrilous, irresponsible attacks which lacked both accuracy and decency. And the worst thing that could happen to the cause against violence and extremism within Islam in this country is to just throw mud at people who have nothing to do with that and thereby discredit the cause of anti-extremism in this country.
And do you think that's what Daniel Pipes and David Horowitz are doing?
That's the danger of what they do.
But could it also be dangerous to ignore the following that Daniel Pipes and David Horowitz have? Their supporters may not be huge in number, but they are Americans from all walks of life. They posted blogs from all over the country declaring their support for the campaigns against Debbie Almontasa and Nadia Abu El Haj. Many thanked the campaigners for protecting American values, where they believed their government had failed.